News Talk 94.9, WSJM. You are listening to Our Take. Thanks for tuning in to this Monday edition of the program. I'm the host today. My name is Andrew Reen. Glad to be with you. This is the show where we have longer conversations about things you may have heard about in the news lately on WSJM News. We have more in-depth conversations with the folks who are in the know or making things happen here in Michigan's great Southwest. And there's plenty to talk about on today's program. Coming up, we will chat with State Representative Dave Pagel to get his impressions of 2017. We'll do a sort of year in review there. And State Rep Pagel of Berrien Springs will look ahead to the priorities for this year, 2018. Also on today's program, we will talk with a representative of the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development, that's HUD. He'll talk with us about homelessness. It's been dropping in Michigan year after year. HUD tracks this information. We'll talk with HUD about that on today's program. We'll also chat with Michigan State University Extension's Mark Longstroth. He is a fruit educator. I checked in with him to see if crops were affected by the recent cold snap we had around here in Michigan's great Southwest. Some record lows were reached. I wondered if that's something farmers need to worry about. We'll find out on today's program. I certainly hope you had an excellent weekend. Now that the long regional nightmare is over and the snow has started to melt, there were still a lot of crashes on the highway this morning, but that hopefully should be clearing up soon as all that snow melts. We made it through. Can you believe it? And I'll be checking in with the Berrien County Parks Department to find out how the skiing action is looking over at Love Creek County Park, where they do cross-country skiing. That'll be coming up on this week's Our Take. And if you'd like to weigh in on something that we discuss on the show, send us an email. The address is ourtake@wsjm.com. That's O-U-R-T-A-K-E at wsjm.com. Right now, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we will chat with State Representative Dave Pagel. News Talk 94.9, WSJM. This is Our Take. Stick around. We'll be right back. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Thanks for tuning in today. Did you have a good weekend? I went and I saw a movie called All the Money in the World. That's the film that Kevin Spacey got cut out of. And I can tell you it was seamless seeing this film. They put Christopher Plummer in the role that Kevin Spacey had originally played. That's the role of J. Paul Getty. It's the story of his grandson being kidnapped back in the 70s. And a very good film, Oscar-worthy sort of film. It was snubbed last night at those Golden Globes. But I do recommend that you check out All the Money in the World. It was a very, very compelling film. Right now for this segment of the show, I thought we would chat with State Representative Dave Pagel. With 2017 now in the can and a new year having begun, this 2018, I wanted to chat with our state lawmakers from Michigan's great Southwest and find out what they felt were the biggest accomplishments of the legislature in 2017, and also what they hope the legislature is able to accomplish here in 2018. So I talked with State Rep Dave Pagel, Republican of Berrien Springs. Let's hear that conversation now. All right, Representative Pagel, so when you reflect back on 2017 in the State House, what do you feel were some of the biggest accomplishments that our legislators were able to pull off?
Well, we always start the year off with a lot of budget work because we try to get that basically wrapped up April and May so we can have final votes by the 1st of June. And I think we did a pretty good job on the budget, a fairly conservative budget, where we kept some of our priorities with, you know, giving some funding for roads and protecting schools and paying down some debt, not getting too lavish with our spending, staying within our budget, which, you know, I wish the federal government would do that in the same manner. We live within our means, so it was a good budget process. Part of the talks early in the season there, early in the year, were to deal with possible eliminating the income tax in Michigan. That was kind of a tough topic for us. Some of us within the Republican caucus really didn't understand how the income tax could be eliminated without identifying specific cuts that we're going to make in the budget and how we're going to move forward. So without that information, we actually, there's about a dozen of us actually opposed that bill, even though we were Republicans. We opposed a tax cut, but I think that was important to protect the commitments we've made from the general fund towards roads in the years ahead and schools. And so that was a tough one, but some of us kind of stuck our necks out a little bit and put that plan to rest. One of the other initiatives that did fail was some reform of the no-fault auto insurance system, and that I would have really supported. I was very disappointed that we fell short on that, because my constituents tell me more often than any other issue that their car insurance rates in Michigan are just too high. But we did fail to get that done, unless it comes back in another form later in this year or in lame duck. Why, that one's still kind of hanging out there.
Okay, so you mentioned that vote over the summer. The State House was talking about eliminating the Michigan income tax. You were one of the lawmakers who voted against it. Did you get some pushback over that?
Yeah, certainly. It's hard for a Republican not to vote for a tax cut, but it was, like I say, a plan to, in its first phase, it was to totally eliminate the income tax over a period of years without any proposed cuts in spending. And the income tax is, you know, something like 90% of our general fund. The numbers just didn't add up for those of us who sit on appropriations and understand the budget pretty thoroughly. And so it was kind of tough. We took some heat. We're still kind of identified as the Dirty Dozen sometimes, but I'm very confident that it was the right thing to do for Michigan, and I stand by that vote. I'll still take criticism on it, but it was a faulty plan. I think it was more political than anything else, and so I opposed it.
And I know in 2017, you personally were part of a task force talking about mental health and corrections.
Yes, a lot of that is still in process. We've got some bills coming out of the CARES task force that I was on. I'm working on a bill which I hope to have in the works early next year in committee with some of the medically frail prisoners, but that could be mental health issues, dementia, some of the real elderly prisoners who are in such a physical state that they're clearly not a danger to society anymore. I have a bill out there where we would verify that with independent medical experts, that they are not a danger, that perhaps we could get better care for them in a medical facility than in prison. And if they're, you know, completely unable to carry out some of the basic functions of life, like grooming and toileting and feeding themselves, really, really frail, maybe we should get some of those folks into a medical facility. So I'm working with the prosecutors who want to protect the rights of the victims, and that's very, very understandable, and they want to protect our principle of truth in sentencing. So if I can get them on board to at least not oppose the bill, I think that should move ahead, and it'll change some lives. It'll be a good thing for our state, and it'll actually save us some money in the medical care of these prisoners, even though that's not my main motivation for it. We have an aging prisoner population, and if anyone's been through those end of life issues with a parent or grandparent, they can know how hard of a time that is for the family, making those tough decisions about hospice and care, and if the family can visit more in the more of a medical facility setting rather than prison, if the doctors can visit the patient a lot more conveniently than checking into a prison, why, I think this will be a good bill if we can find the right balance to continue to protect the public interest while actually giving some humane care to some of these real elderly, frail prisoners. So I expect that to move forward. It's a lot of work, a lot of details to put into place, but we're getting there. We're getting pretty close.
We're talking with State Representative Dave Pagel about sort of a 2017 year in review. Now, talking to other lawmakers from Southwest Michigan, something that they've identified as areas of progress in the past year were pensions.
We did get some unfunded liability reform through with some of our municipalities in the state are really getting on the brink of financial trouble because of the post-employment benefits that have been promised to their employees. So we passed a bill to kind of draw more attention to that at least and put into place some safeguards to help communities address those problems before they become real critical and communities head towards bankruptcy. So I think that was a good accomplishment of the legislature. Personally, I think I had two bills go through and get signed into law. One I did with Representative Lasada. We had a two-bill package to catch some out-of-staters who were not paying their proper property tax on their second homes. Our county treasurer, Brett Witkowski, got me an idea to help us get at that problem. So we got that passed into law. Then I had a minor bill, again, with my corrections work to allow the Department of Corrections to actually, in some circumstances, hire a felon who has gone through the system and been released and is, in the job market. The department is always working hard now to try to make exiting prisoners more successful in society and give them job skills and help them find jobs with different companies. And so they came to me with the idea, say, hey, we would like to be able to hire some in some cases with careful discretion. And so I didn't even realize that was against the law, but so we changed that on a bill that I had. So not a major thing, but I think it's a nice bill. And again, there'll be a few lives changed for the better with that.
Okay, so that's 2017. And when you look ahead to this new year, 2018, what are some priorities you're hoping the legislature can address?
Well, I'd like to see us not give up totally on auto no-fault, although there's just a lot of resistance in the legislature with some of the reps who are, have some ties to hospitals or the insurance industry. But I'd like us not to give up on that. I don't know. It's a tough one. But maybe if we don't try to solve it all in one fell swoop, if we put into place maybe some pieces like some kind of a rate schedule of what the care providers can charge. Right now it's basically uncapped, and there's some pretty outlandish charges being given. As long as it's an automobile accident, the hospitals can charge pretty much whatever they want. So one solution is to put some type of a rate structure in place. There are some ideas that maybe one at a time we could do some things to bring down some of those costs. So that's just such a burden on so many folks. Other than that, we'll have another budget cycle coming up. I will again be doing the budget for the prison system, the corrections, which is, surprisingly, it's $2 billion of our $10 billion general fund. So it's important work. Last year, we were actually able to bring down spending a little bit from the previous year. I hope to be able to do that again while still continuing to support some programs for prisoner success, basically education, job training, some things that can help prisoners to not return to prison. So we'll continue to work on that front. And I always keep an eye on the education budget, even though I don't sit on that committee. So I'm sure I'll be active on that front again also.
And this is your last year in the Michigan House, correct?
Last year in the House, for sure. Yeah, so it's my third term, and it'll be the second year of the third term. So that's all we're allowed is 3 2-year terms. It's kind of a strange situation there. I've got mixed feelings about being done in the House because I'm starting to, just get to know the budget better and better and feeling like I could make a difference a little bit more with another term or two. But that's not the system we have, so I'll turn it over to someone else and they can, start their learning process. But the term limits seem to be a little bit short for me as far as what would be really best for the state of Michigan, especially if we continue to talk about maybe a part-time legislature. I think the term should be a little bit longer than they could still have limits, but allow someone to stay there 8 or 10 or 12 years rather than a six-year limit. But that's just my personal feelings.
We've been talking with State Representative Dave Pagel for a look at 2018. Anything else you'd like to add, Representative?
No, I've enjoyed very much my first 5 years, and I'm looking forward to finishing strong. And it's just an honor to have this role. And I've certainly enjoyed getting around in the 78th District, meeting different community leaders and seeing some of the programs that go on. Just helping serve dinner a little bit at a Thanksgiving food bank operation. You just meet a lot of good people and you have a lot of good experiences. So I've enjoyed it very much. And to quite a bit of an extent, I will miss it.
That was State Representative Dave Pagel of Berrien Springs talking with us about 2017 and 2018. Ended there by noting the 2018 will be his last year in the state house. And he says, you know, maybe just 6 years in the house isn't enough. And I've wondered about that myself. You know, any given member of the Michigan House has only been there for a maximum of 6 years at any given time. That's not a whole lot of time to get your bearings. But there you go. This will be the last year that he is in the state house. And I appreciate Representative Pagel's time. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. And right now it's time for a break. When we come back, we'll chat with HUD, the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development, to find out about the latest homelessness trends in Michigan. I'll give you a hint. Homelessness has been trending down in our state. We'll talk with HUD about that on the next segment of the program. And if you'd like to weigh in on something we've discussed, send us an email. The address is ourtake@wsjm.com. That's O-U-R-T-A-K-E at wsjm.com. Stick around. We'll be right back. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Thanks for tuning in to this Monday edition of the show. Glad to be with you. I'm the host today. My name is Andrew Green. Coming up on today's program, later on, we'll chat with a local agriculture expert to find out how the weather this winter has affected Southwest Michigan crops. Right now, though, I thought we'd chat with HUD. They recently issued a report. That is the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. They issued a report noting that homelessness has been dropping lower and lower here in Michigan the last several years. It's dropped 2.9% since last year and 30% since 2010. And so HUD had some thoughts on this. I chatted with the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development Deputy Regional Administrator James Cunningham to find out more. Let's hear that conversation now. Okay, James, so homelessness is in Michigan here, but really around the nation. It's been trending down, correct?
Yeah, we've seen significant decreases. Local communities in Michigan report the number of persons experiencing long-term chronic homelessness, for example, has decreased 1.5% since 2016, but since 2010, that number has gone down by 61.4%. And just overall homelessness has decreased since 30% since 2010 in the state of Michigan.
So does HUD have thoughts as to why this is? Is it just the improving economy in general?
I mean, I think there's several factors. I think the approach that HUD has taken with the Housing First model and changing the focus to getting folks into housing first and then providing the support services to keep them off homelessness. So we've had concerted efforts with our local homeless service providers across the country, but in Michigan as well, that allows them to better serve homeless persons and make it, once we get them into housing, that it is permanent housing and that the incidences of homelessness are less recurring. So they're not happening as much. We're not having people fall in and out of homelessness. Once we get them into housing, we're keeping them there. So I think that's why we're seeing the long-term trends of decreased homelessness, because we're just doing a better job of providing housing and services to keep folks housed.
So do we have numbers regarding how many people HUD is able to house in a given year, say here in Michigan?
The this data does not have that, and I don't have that readily available. I mean, so what we're doing, you know, with the point in time count is looking at a single data point on a single night typically in the month of January on how many folks are homeless. It would take us a long while to find out the actual number of persons housed, but we can track those experiencing homelessness and how we're progressing in making that number go down.
So there are ways that HUD has helped to reduce homelessness since 2010. How do you identify the individuals who are in need, and how do you help them?
So we work with local nonprofit organizations. So there are local continuum of care, what we call continuum of cares. There are 21 different continuum of cares in the state of Michigan. And what we task them with doing, and they're the ones that are eligible to apply for HUD homeless assistance programs, whether it's permanent supportive housing, transitional housing. We're obviously focused on permanent supportive housing. But these groups plan, so they know their local communities. We're not doing a top-down approach from that the federal government tells you how to run your programs. We actually have these, it's basically a consortium of local homeless service providers to get together, identify the gaps in their service provision, mm-hmm. and then they apply to HUD for the programs that we provide under the continuum of care. So they apply on a competitive basis, on an annual basis, to get the funds to provide it. But I think the key is that it's locally driven. So these 21 continuum of cares in Michigan are all planning locally. There's actually 20, and then the rest are covered what we call the balance of state. So the whole state geographically is covered by one of these organizations, and they are responsible for planning and meeting the needs, filling the gaps, and applying for the funding from HUD so that they can target their assistance to meet the needs locally.
Okay, and from HUD's perspective, moving forward, you know, what else needs to be done to continue reducing these homeless figures?
So we keep refining how we track and go after homelessness. One of the things that we've done in the last several years is, you know, target veterans' homelessness. And one of the things that we found is that once you can identify who they are, that you have what we call a coordinated entry system. So that once they're in the system, we track them and we know where they are. We can also match them with the degree of services that they need. We've also done a lot of, we changed from, again, we're trying to move away from transitional shelters to moving to more permanent supportive housing. So as we move along in time, we're identifying more permanent supportive housing activities where people have the housing and then they get the wraparound services that they need. So continuums are continuing to build those types of facilities. So in the long run, we're getting those that are hardest to serve into housing first, providing them the services, which makes it easier to address, you know, those that may fall, you know, the one-offs that, you know, I lost my job or I had a medical issue. It makes it easier to serve those folks that are able to be resilient and get back into housing quicker, so we have some rapid rehousing programs. So the idea is that we go after the hardest to serve first, know who they are, have a coordinated entry, make sure they're going into the right type of housing that meets their needs, that makes it easier to help the family, you know, say it's a family that falls into homelessness because someone was laid off. Then we can actually better assist them with a short-term housing option because they typically, you know, they don't have all of the health and other issues that go along with homelessness.
All right, so HUD's been working with organizations all over each state that it serves, the local organizations, to identify individuals who need housing and doing what it can to keep people in that housing once they're identified. James, is there anything else you would like to add about the latest homelessness trends in Michigan?
No, we just want, you know, other than we want, you know, thank the partners, it's the dedicated professionals at the local level that are dedicated to ending homelessness, and, you know, we appreciate their partnerships, and I think the numbers prove that we are continuing to make progress so that if one day we will truly end this plight.
Okay, that was James Cunningham with the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. He is the deputy regional administrator in our neck of the woods, noting that homelessness in Michigan is down 30% since 2010. And HUD says it's partly because of their efforts to find housing for individuals who need it and also to keep them in it once it has been obtained. And so I appreciate James's time there talking with us. By the way, the generally improving economy also regarded as a major factor in that figure. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. You're listening to Our Take, and right now I wanted to fill you in on what U.S. Senator Gary Peters has to say about self-driving vehicles and the economic opportunities they create here in our fair state of Michigan. Michigan News Network caught up with Senator Peters. He says many U.S. auto companies are now working on self-driving vehicles, as we know, and there is legislation now in the United States Senate to provide those companies the opportunity to test their vehicles out on the road. Here's Senator Gary Peters.
My focus is to make sure Michigan is the center of that activity. We will continue to be the leader in the auto industry. The legislation that I've written with my colleague, a bipartisan, Senator Thune, we've worked on a bipartisan basis, will allow us to further this technology and in the process save thousands and thousands of lives.
U.S. Senator Gary Peters there of Michigan, he predicts self-driving vehicles will end up saving 40,000 lives per year. And, of course, I wonder how many jobs will be lost because of them. But Senator Peters says this is an opportunity for Michigan. He has a bill that would advance the development and deployment of self-driving vehicles. It has been approved by the Commerce Committee. That happened in October. He's hoping to move it forward in the U.S. Senate this year, if that's at all possible.
It's critically important for Michigan. Michigan needs to be the center of the activity associated with self-driving cars. Michigan is already the auto capital. We are where we make and design the best automobiles in the world. But the future of the industry will be self-driving, particularly in terms of safety. We believe that self-driving vehicles can eliminate nearly all auto crashes.
So they say self-driving cars will be safer. That's probably true. And so Senator Peters, his bill would allow those vehicles to be tested on the road here in Michigan.
Unfortunately, you know, federal regulations often can take years and years to develop. And we're in a race right now. We're in a race with companies in Asia and companies in Europe that want to be the first to develop this technology. I want to make sure it's American companies that are first. It's going to be a significant competitive advantage. We have to do it right. So the legislation does it in a thoughtful way, but allows this technology to move forward.
Peter's bill passing the Commerce Committee last October. He's waiting to see if it will go before the United States Senate soon. So self-driving vehicles are definitely coming. They'll probably take over within 20 years or so. If it wasn't for all the jobs that'll be lost as a result, I'd be okay with it. I don't really particularly enjoy driving. If I could just sit back and read a book or something, that would be fine with me, so we'll see how long it takes for this technology to develop, and Senator Gary Peters hopes to make it easier to test these vehicles, and he wants it to be done right here in Michigan. News Talk 94.9 WSJM, you are listening to Our Take. Right now we'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we will chat with Mark Longstroth. He is a Michigan State University Extension Office fruit educator. I wanted to find out how the crops here in Michigan's great Southwest have been affected by the weather we've had so far this winter. If you'd like to weigh in on something we've discussed, just send us an email. The address is ourtake@wsjm.com. That's ourtake@wsjm.com. Stick around. We'll be right back. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Thanks for tuning in to this Monday edition of the program. Glad to be here now that the snow is melting here. We'll see how long that lasts. Looking at the forecast, a high of 32 tomorrow, a high of 45 on Wednesday. Things are looking up finally here in Michigan's great Southwest. I am the host of today's program. My name is Andrew Green, and this is the show where we have longer looks at things you may have heard about on WSJM News as of late. If you've heard about it in our news coverage, you'll hear about it in a more extended fashion on Our Take. We play the full conversations with folks who are in the know or making things happen in Michigan's great Southwest. So far in today's program, we chatted with State Representative Dave Pagel, took a long look at 2017. He told us what he thought were the biggest accomplishments of the State House in the past year. And then State Rep Pagel looked ahead to 2018 and told us about what he hopes the priorities will be. That includes auto insurance reform. They're not giving up Also on today's program, we talked with a representative of the housing, the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, to find out about the latest homelessness figures in Michigan. Homelessness is down 30% since 2010, and HUD likes to take some credit for that. So we heard about that on today's program. Right now, I thought I'd check in with the Michigan State University Extension Office to talk about Southwest Michigan's crops. You know, we had a big, long, cold spell there, some record lows. I wondered if agriculture was going to be affected in our region. So I chatted with Mark Longstroth, fruit educator with MSU Extension. Let's hear that conversation now. Now, you know, as you know, we've had this especially cold weather. Now, how do Southwest Michigan crops handle weather like this?
Well, we're really lucky in the fact that it was cold before it got really cold. So the plants are about as well adjusted to the cold as they could possibly be. Generally, I don't worry too much if the temperatures get down to zero, but I really start to worry when the temperatures get to minus 10 degrees. Generally, some of the more tender wine grapes will be hurt by temperatures, you know, below minus 5. But when we get to minus 10, then we start to see damage to things like peaches. Generally, the peach flower buds are hurt by temperatures between minus 13, which causes some damage, and minus 16, which causes a lot of damage. So generally, by the time we get below minus 10, I'm worried about temperatures. And we've had those types of temperatures away from Lake Michigan, but generally in Berrien County, because you're so close to the lake and you're often cloudy and it's often snowing, the temperatures don't get quite as cold. But we're supposed to be cold for a while. Everybody remembers our really cold polar vortex winters of 2014 and 2015 when we got down to minus 20 and had widespread damage in wine grapes and peaches and blueberries. But we're not there yet. And so in some of the interior areas, they've already been down below minus 10, and that's one of the reasons why they don't grow an awful lot of wine grapes or peaches in interior Michigan, but generally closer to Lake Michigan.
So would you say that the polar vortex year there, 2014-15, is that the worst year you can remember?
It was actually pretty funny. We had a very cold winter in 1994, the first year I started, where we got down to like minus 25, minus 28. And so then that 2014 year, it was like, 20 years later. Once every 20 years, and then the very next year, it happened again. So it seems like with the climate change or global warming, people think that, you know, the winters are going to be really warm, and in general, they are warm, but that cold mass of air on the pole has become less stable and has a tendency to slide down, and that's what we're experiencing right now, is just really cold polar air sitting over Canada and the eastern United States.
Well, at least it's good to know that our grape growers around here don't have much to worry about for the time being anyway.
Well, they're worried. They're worried, you know, and there are certainly colder spots. Like the air, if we get a cold, clear night with no wind, it gets really cold. And the cold air will just flow downhill and collect in the low areas. And so that's generally where we see the damage first. And then if you tell me that the temperature is, say, like minus 5, you're looking at a thermometer that's at 5 feet, and it's actually usually 3 or 4 or more degrees colder right above the snow line. And so sometimes we see damage just for a few inches, maybe a foot, and we can tell where the snow line was when that damage occurred, because I'm thinking of blueberries here, but there'll be lots of flower buds. And sometimes you'll see it in ornamental forsythias, too, where there'll be lots of flowers within a foot of the ground where they were covered by the snow, and then there are no flowers in the top of the bush because they were killed by the winter cold. And forsythia, in general, is a pretty good shrub to look at, because forsythia flowers and peach flowers die at about the same temperature.
Mm.
So the grape guys, they'll be going out after it warms up a bit, and they'll be taking samples, and they'll be cutting the buds open to determine what percentage of the buds were killed. And the peach growers will do the same thing, is they'll take them out of the field and let them warm up in the house, and then cut them open and see if the inside of that bud is still green or if it's turned brown or black, which would indicate that the flower itself has been killed.
All right, that was Mark Longstroth, fruit educator, Michigan State University Extension. Thus far, he doesn't think that crops in southwest Michigan have been damaged by the weather we've experienced. It still would have to get a little bit colder, he was telling us. But he does remember those years of the polar vortex, 14, 15. He remembers those years quite well, but Mark, they're telling us we haven't quite reached that territory yet. And as noted, luckily, we're supposed to get a high of 45 on a Wednesday of this week, so things are a slightly warmer around Michigan's great southwest. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. One more thing to tell you about here for this edition of Our Take. Michigan News Network has reached out to Grand Valley State University economist Dr. Brian Long to get his thoughts on the state of West Michigan's economy as we head into 2018 here, new year now underway. So MNN talked with Dr. Brian Long, and he told them the recovery from the Great Recession relied heavily on the automotive industry, even though sales dropped in December and for all of last year. He sees that as a possible problem heading into 2018. But
I expect the rest of the year in 2018 is going to show some weakness as far as automotive is concerned, but we will not have the collapse like we've had other times because the rest of the economy is still on an even keel.
So that's Dr. Brian Long saying the economy looks pretty strong here heading into 2018. The West Michigan economy on solid footing, according to his latest report out of Grand Valley State University. Dr. Long says many areas are at or near full employment right now.
We look going into 2018 for the continued strong employment situation to continue, but there's only so far that we can go. Automotive can only take us so far, and we're probably approaching the upper limit of what we can expect.
Dr. Long also told us when it comes to housing, the report has found the availability of homes for sale has not even come close to meeting the demand. So housing prices will continue to skyrocket in some areas of West Michigan. And that's something that's been borne out by what I was told by the Southwest Michigan Association of Realtors. We have a very limited housing inventory right now. Home builders just haven't been stepping up to build new homes, which has resulted in sort of a shortage of them. And prices are going way up. If you want to sell a house right now, it's a good time to do so. You can fetch yourself a high price for that. But Dr. Brian Long there, nevertheless, predicting Michigan's economy will be on solid footing here heading into 2018. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. That does it for today's edition of Our Take. Thanks for tuning in. Coming up on tomorrow's program, we'll talk with State Representative Kim Lasada. She'll take a look back at 2017, tell us what she felt the biggest accomplishments of the legislature were, and she'll also look ahead to 2018 to see what her priorities will be heading into this new year. And also on tomorrow's program, we'll talk with the Heritage Museum and Cultural Center about a crowdfunding campaign that they have launched to try to repair their, well, actually get a new HVAC system after a problem with the HVAC system damaged their building recently. We'll learn about that on tomorrow's Our Take. And if you'd like to weigh in on something we've discussed, just send us an email. The address is ourtake@wsjm.com. That's O-U-R-T-A-K-E at wsjm.com. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This has been Our Take. I hope you have a fantastic rest of your day.